But anyway, as we look at the lessons today, I want us to think about something we all know about, very familiar, kind of as, and you know, there's not going to, and generally we don't say anything earth-shattering anyway, do we? As preachers, we stand up and we'd like to think that we said something that nobody's ever talked about or nobody's ever said, and you get through and you realize there's nothing new that we can say. And so hopefully as we go through that the things that I have for us this morning, and of course as well when we look this evening as well, will be encouragement to us. As I said last year we were here as well, and I did the Wednesday. I would like, if you don't mind, for your participation in some of the things that we go through. It's not as much because the time is shorter, but if you will, I'd appreciate your input in some things that we have. If you have any questions, just stop me, and we'll try to deal with those at that time as well. As we go through, and I remember, as I said, we were here last year, and we went and we talked about the Ten Commandments, and we talked about, as we looked at that then, we also talked about the golden calf. And I don't expect anybody to remember this, but we had just started in our Sunday night lessons there at Highlands. We had just started going through the Old Testament. I say just started. Now, that's not really so. Somebody reminded me Sunday night that we've been in the Old Testament for 4.5 years. We've gotten to 1 Samuel chapter 27. And as we've gotten there, oh, he had another screen. As we got to 1 Samuel chapter 27, we're of course talking about David, and we're looking at his life. And one of the things that we realize about his life that I think is a very encouraging thing to us is that generally as we go through, we talk about the things that we see in his life and the things that he did, and we kind of put him on that idea of in that hall of faith. And we look at his faith and we major on that, and we need to. I don't want to say that we don't, but we need to major on that. But as we go through his life, we see his name there listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Jeremy, yesterday morning, he had talked about, as we spoke about Samson, he said that he kind of seems, you know, almost out of place sometimes, that you kind of are surprised to see his name listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Who aren't you surprised at? Nobody's surprised that David's listed there, are they? What does the Bible say, and what does God call David? Just say about David. He's a man after his own heart. Well, somebody that's described in that way, you would expect him to be listed among people that are people of faith. And as I said, that he is. As we started the book of 1 Samuel, as we said back home, and I looked, and we've started 1 Samuel a year ago. So that means that we've pretty much averaged two sermons on every chapter for a year. But one of the things that amazes me about the book of 1 Samuel is it kind of reads like a soap opera. Anybody ever watch a soap opera? Yeah, don't try to say no. I'm sure everybody has. I remember growing up that we always sat down in front of the TV on whatever night it was, and we watched Dallas. And that was a nighttime soap opera, and so you try to convince yourself that's better than those daytime ones. But anyway, we sat down, we watched Dallas. As a youngster, you know, during summer, and today that there are so many activities to do, and you know, watch TV and play video games. Well, all that was on, we had CBS, ABC, and NBC. That's all we had growing up. And so when you were out of school, all that was on during the daytime was soap opera, so we went outside and we played. Well, as I said, now today there's so much, there's cable and there's video games and there's things like that. But when it rained and we had to stay inside, you know, one of the things that always gets me too, you know, kids, they'll say, there's nothing to do. And you look around, you think, what are you talking about? number one, there's always housework to do. My kids don't like to do that. So when I try to suggest that, they say, oh, Dad, no, we're not talking about that. But as I said, they have, when we were growing up and it rained outside, there really almost was nothing to do because we had those three channels and on during the daytime, all that was on was soap operas because that's all that's on in the afternoon. What's the characteristic of a good soap opera? Somebody tell me what, when you watch a soap opera, what do you expect to happen? Okay, affairs. Villains. You got the bad guys. Okay, you got the good guys. What else did somebody say? Okay. Okay. Just a lot of things that aren't good, but one of the things is how do they hook you? How do they hook you from day to day? Cliffhangers. There's always cliffhangers. And there's always, you go through and you look at it and there's always a twist. And that, you know, there's something that comes up you're just not expecting. Well, in our study of David and Goliath, it's expected that David's the hero, right? And that everything that David's going to do, because he's a man after God's own heart, we say, well, everything he's going to do is going to be good. Well, we know better than that as we study the Bible. We realize that. But when, you know, for somebody, if they've not read the Bible, if they've not talked about the Bible, what's the first thing that we think about when we go study David? I was hoping that would be the second thing. We think about David and Goliath, don't we? We think about Goliath and how big he was and what a great war that was. And that we see that David, here's this little boy, the shepherd boy, and he's going to go against this great giant Goliath. And that's the first story that you think about. What's the second story? Now you can go. You talk his affair with Bathsheba. And those are a lot of times as we look at it, those are kind of the two things that we think about David. But if you'll think with me for just a minute before we get specifically into our lesson, I want us to look at some bad things about David. And I do this for one reason. It is an encouraging thing to me, not that he did some bad things, but to realize here is a man that is described as a man of faith. He's described as a man after God's own heart, but he had a lot of problems. And we don't major on those problems. We don't really look at those. We, you know, as I said, those are kind of two stories that we look at. We look at David and Goliath. We look at David and Bathsheba. There are some things that were associated with his sin with Bathsheba that really made that a greater thing, a bigger thing that happened. But as you go back for just a minute, and we'll kind of just mention some things. But if you go back to 1 Samuel chapter 13. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, Saul had been going out, was supposed to go out, and he was supposed to give an offering. Children of Israel are going to go against Gilgal. We start here with Saul. We'll talk about Saul just a little bit. Saul had been, to understand a little bit about the background, not that we don't, but as we've been studying the Bible, that Saul had been appointed to be king. Whose king was Saul? Was he God's king? No, he wasn't God's king, was he? He was a people's king. Now, God, yes, God did anoint him. But by that, I simply mean God had always designed and always, as we go through history, and as we talked about, you know, yesterday, we looked at Samson. God had said that the people of Israel were going to be led by a judge. Well, that as we look at things that happened during that time, that there would be somebody that would come against the Israelites. And the only reason for that, if you remember, that as they went in and entered the land, what did God tell them to do? Everybody was supposed to go. Not just go, they were supposed to die. They were supposed to be wiped out of the land, weren't they? What did the Israelites do? They kind of signed a peace treaty with some. And I think the reason for that is because there were some that they realized that, you know, we can use these people later on in our, you know, as we go through, and they can help us some. So they allowed some people, and that's the only reason. Had they wiped them out, they wouldn't have had all the problems we read about in Judges, and they wouldn't needed all these judges to rise up to help them to overcome these different nations. Well, what's amazing, and I know we studied this last night, but real quick, what's amazing is that a lot of times that there were years and years and years that they would allow that nation to rule over them, and finally they would ask for a judge. One of the things that we see about that is it was when the people asked for help that God then raised up a judge. And the people then overcame through the leadership of that judge. Well, finally, we come, of course, to Samuel, and we'll talk about him more tonight as we go through and we talk about Samuel and Hannah. But as we look at him, then we come across the kings. The people decide, well, we don't want to be led by judges anymore. There's a reason for that, of course. Eli had not been the kind of person that he should. He wasn't restraining his kids. Said, well, we need you know, or Samuel, we need judges, or we need kings. So God said, okay. Samuel says, well, you know, they're against me. They don't want me to rule over them. They don't want me to be their judge. And God says, well, it's not you. It's me they've rejected. And so Saul offers up to the, or Saul is their king. He's become their king. And so that's why I say he was the people's king. It was always in God's plan that the people would be ruled by a king. Who was supposed to be the first king? Okay, before that, in the Old Testament, who was supposed to be the first king? God had decided that the people were under in Israel were going to be ruled by a king. The judges were not supposed to be a people that were supposed to continue to rule. Who was supposed to be the first one? David. David was supposed to be the first king. We hadn't gotten there yet. And the people began to say, no, we don't want judges anymore. We want a king. And so Saul is going to be offered up to be the first king. He was in that soap opera idea. What do you know about Saul? What do you know about his appearance? Let's say that. He's tall. Handsome. Okay, he looked good. He looked the part. Boy, if you had a soap opera, if you were having a movie that, and you were going to go out and you're going to script it and you're going to get all your characters, that was kind of the first people you'd look at. He's handsome. He's tall. The Bible says, and I think it's interesting. Look over to 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 2. I think it's interesting the way that he puts it here. But 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 2, the Bible says, and he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. That was not a more, or there was not a more handsome person that among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. That mean he had a big giraffe neck? No, that just means he's head and shoulders above everybody else. He's taller than everybody else. But so he looks good. He looks the part. And so he becomes the first king of Israel. Well, he wasn't a very good king, was he? Started out pretty good. He started out pretty good. But here in 1 Samuel chapter 13, they're going to go against Gilgal. Samuel says, I want you to stay there for 7 days. And after 7 days, I'm going to come and I'm going to offer up a burnt offering. Well, Saul waited 7 days. Samuel hadn't shown up yet. And so Saul goes out and he offers up the burnt offering, which was a sin. It was up to the judge here, the priest that was supposed to offer it. And so he goes out and he offers it anyway. And if you'll look with me in 1 Samuel chapter 13 for just a second, this is the first time that as you look at that, God makes this statement to him. In verse 13 of chapter 13, it says, and Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God when he commanded you. For now the Lord whom has established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be a commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Now, we go on and we see a lot of things that happen in the life of Saul as we go through that. Let's skip over for just a second 1 Samuel chapter 17, because that's where we're going to major our time. And I'm babbling here a little bit, getting time get away. But in 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 7 beginning, we read about how that all this kind of started, jealousy and envy of what happened with David, because he had killed this great giant Goliath. And Saul was upset at that. The women had gone around and saying, it's beginning in verse 7, it says, saying as they danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. And then Saul was very angry at this saying, displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000, and to me they described only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? He said, what's left? Except he's going to take the kingdom away from me. Well, he didn't know that. Nobody knew that yet. But that's all he realized, that because all the people glorified him and thought that he was somebody great, because, or he was, not thought that he was, but he's someone because of what he did with David or Goliath. And so Saul realizes, you know, he's going to take the kingdom away from me someday. Now, he makes that statement a couple of times throughout this, and he does realize that's what was going to happen, even before he knew definitely what was going to happen. But that he's going to take the kingdom. You look at David's life. At that point, what did Saul try to do to David? What he began trying to do to David? Trying to kill him. Look at verse 9 there, what we do there in 1 Samuel chapter 18. Says, so Saul eyed David from that day forward. That means he looked for opportunity to kill him. And he went over and over trying to get. David wanders around different places. He goes in. He has to live in caves. He slept under the stars. And all these things happen because Saul is trying to seek. He came close a couple times. But also, we remember there were two occasions where David had an opportunity to kill Saul. He didn't do it. One, that Saul had gone into the cave, and all the people that had been with him at that time, he says, well, he says, now's your chance, go kill him. Well, David goes and he cuts out a piece of his robe, and he goes and follows Saul out, and he shows David. He says, I had a chance to kill you, and I didn't do it. And what did Saul tell him? What did Saul say he was going to do then? First of all, he said to David that you have been what? More righteous than I have. And so he said, because of that, he said he was sorry, basically repented. And what did he say he wasn't going to do anymore? I'm going to try to kill him, was he? He says, I'm not going to do that anymore. Next chapter, Saul tries to kill him. He goes at him again. Well, there's another opportunity David has to go and to kill him again. And they're all there in the camp. They're watching down on him. He takes somebody with him, and they're all asleep. 3,000 soldiers. Can you imagine? They're all around him. And so they're in the middle, and David sees him there sleeping. And what was by Saul's head? You remember? His sword. And so David and his guy, they sneak down. It's soap opera bound. David, they sneak down, and what did they do with that sword? He pulled that sword out of the ground, and remember what else was there? There was a jug. And so they take that jug, and they leave, and they call down to Saul and the rest of the army, and they say, hey, look, we've got your sword, and we've got your jug. It was proof that they had been there. And so what did Saul do? Ma'am? They are more determined than ever, but when he realized that David had the opportunity to kill him and didn't, remember what Saul said he wasn't going to do anymore? Well, I'm going to try to kill him. I'm not going to try to kill you. Next chapter. Next chapter, as we look at it, and this doesn't have to do with Saul trying to kill him. But as we go through that, you think that, you know, here David and Saul, they're going to go hand in hand, and they're going to continue now. They're going to work together. Saul's going to help David out to become the kind of king that he needs to be, because he realizes he's going to do it. And as we look at it, I said, I want to look at this last. It kind of fits in with the end of our story here. But where did David go? You remember where David went for refuge? He had done this before. But you know where he went to? He went to the Philistines. I think, and this is where what we studied Sunday night, but I think that David had gotten so discouraged that Saul had been looking. He had already told him one time before that I'm not going to seek your life. I'm not going to kill you. And he still tried to kill him. Saul tells him again in chapter 28, he says, I'm not going to try to kill you anymore. He'd also, before that, even with Jonathan, he told Jonathan he wasn't going to try. Because Jonathan convinced him David hadn't done anything worthy of dying for. And so David realizes, you know, I don't know if this is going to happen. Look at chapter 27 real quick. It says, and David said in his heart, now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. Even though Saul had just said, I'm not going to try to kill you, David says, you know, one of these days Saul's going to get me. He's going to kill me. He says, there is something better for me that I should speedily escape by to the land of the Philistines. And Saul will despair of me to seek me anymore in any part of Israel, so I shall escape out of his hand. Was he successful in that? He said, Saul's not going to look for him anymore. Was he successful? What did Saul do when he found out that David had fled to the Philistines? He stopped. He said, I'm not going to look for him anymore. Not going to kill him. And he didn't. And in fact, in chapter 28, that's the last time that David and Saul saw one another. David had become so discouraged that he decides that I'm going to go to the Philistines, which are my mortal enemies. I've gone in the land. Now remember, as I said, he's already gone in once before to the Philistines, and he's tried to refuge, and he realized that wasn't the place that I need to be. And he left. He lied to the king and said, you know, well, the king sent me, or Saul sent me and everything. And so I need to go and get a sword, and I need all these things. But he lied to the king to do that. One of the flaws of David. Yes. Right.
So the only alternative would have been to escape, because Saul would never give up and David couldn't kill him. So that's really the only thing left to do, is he would hunt him no matter where he was, if he stayed in Israel or Judah.
One of the things that David did say in chapter 28, I appreciate you saying that, because it can remind me, one of the things that David did say was when he found Saul this second time, he said, look, he says, you've made me go from all these different places, and you're making me live with these people that are heathens. You've taken me away from my own people, and you're making me live among the heathen. But look at where he goes to right after that. He goes to the Philistines, however you want to say it. He goes to them for shelter, and he gets it. They even give him a land. They gave him the land of Ziklag. And so he's there. He's safe. He stays there for over a year. And he becomes what the king thought was the enemy of Israel. In fact, he's going to even participate later in a battle against Israel. And so David's life is a life as we see it. That, as I see it anyway, is a life that, yes, it's a life of faith. He's a man after God's own heart. But he also is encouraging to me to realize that he's just like I am. And that's really 1 Samuel. The things that I said when we started 1 Samuel is, and one of the things I like about it, yes, it does read kind of like a soap opera, kind of like a movie script. But it's real people. They have real problems, and there are a lot of problems like I am. Yes, I guess we could say that David is kind of the hero of the book. Because we read a lot about him and we see what he had to do, but he had some difficulties in his life. But there's one thing about that that finally got him out of that difficulty. It was the same thing that started with David and Goliath. And I would suggest as well that it's really the secret to getting ahead, for us to get ahead in life, isn't it? The same thing that David, the same ways that David overcame Goliath, that's how we get ahead in life. That's our goal in life, isn't it? We always want to get ahead. And a lot of times we talk about that. We kind of speak about that in a financial way. But there are a lot of different ways that we want to get ahead in life. We want to do some things. Well, let's go through this for just a minute. And kind of time, as I said, kind of already gotten away a little bit. But anyway, that in 1 Samuel chapter 17, just kind of go through this. We're introduced to David and Goliath. Let's look at the first 10 verses. Bible says, "Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle, and were gathered to Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Soko and Ezekah in Ephedamon. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up the battle array against the Philistines." Real quick, somebody told me one time all these words that we look at, and I'm just amazed at some people that are able to say those. They said, just say them real fast and with confidence, everybody think you know what you're saying. I can't do that because I want to say them right and I stumble. But anyway, it says, "The Philistines stood up on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood up on a mountain on the other side with the valley between them." And so what we see here, we see the valley of Elah. Now, there's two mountains, and that's what the Bible says about them. They're two mountains. We might call them two hills. But here you have the Israelites on one hill. You have the Philistines on the other hill. They're, you know, that they stood up on the mountain on one side, the Israelites on the other side, and there's a valley there. And so this is where they're going to meet. But in verse 4, it says, "And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." Anybody know what a champion, what was he a champion of? You know what the word champion means? The word champion, the Hebrew word here for champion, it's not what we think. It's not the champion. It's not somebody that's great. But in Hebrew, a champion just meant a middleman. That's what he was. He's a middleman. He was a champion. He's a great warrior. But he was a middleman. How is he a middleman?
He wasn't royalty.
Okay, he wasn't royalty. But for the Philistines, and what's going to happen? Who's going to fight for the Philistines? I said, you've got the Israelites on one mountain, one hill, whatever, you've got the Philistines on the other. Israelites, Philistines. That's usually who a battle is. You know, they're going to fight each other, right? But what is Goliath?
I guess he would stand down as being a soldier or maybe an outsider that they hired or something.
Okay. He was a Philistine. He was a middleman for him. He says later on, and we're going to get to it in just a minute. He says, "I'm going to fight for you. You get somebody and come fight for me." And we're going to kind of, and I think it's kind of, it doesn't mean this specific, but they're going to meet kind of in the middle in the valley. But the point is that it was somebody that was going to, he was going to fight for him. It's the man that was between the armies. And he fought as, I guess you'd say in another sense, that he was the representative of the Philistines. The Philistines weren't going to have to fight, were they? It's only going to be Goliath. He's the representative of them. And so that he was the champion. And yes, he was a great warrior, and there are some other things as well. But he was the middleman. He was the man that fought on their behalf. But here he goes up. The Bible says that he's 6 cubits in a span. Anybody know how tall that is? Probably about 9 feet. Anywhere, there are some estimates anywhere between 8'5" and 9'2". You ever see anybody that tall? Yeah. Well, you know, we look at that and it's a couple feet taller than a basketball player, isn't it? Usually we look at people and, you know, we look at these basketball players and say, man, well, there's never been, but there have been people that tall. Ancient history has found there have been people that were that tall. In fact, even in 1940, there was a man, I don't know if I wrote his name down, but anyway, there was a man that lived, and he was eight feet tall, and I didn't write it down exactly, but he was over 8 feet tall. In 1940, he had a disease, and he died at a fairly young age, but anyway, he died in 1940. So there have been people that have been quite tall, taller than a basketball player. You know, that's what we usually see. But anyway, he says he's somewhere between that 8'5" and 9'2". How tall was David? Doesn't say, does it? But as we look at it, here's a man. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail or maul, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. How much did it weigh? Anybody know how much that is? About 150. Somewhere, some even estimate that it might have been up to 200 pounds. How much did David weigh? Doesn't say. Probably soaking wet, he didn't weigh that much. Yeah. Still a grown boy. How old was he? Somebody else? How old was he? Not that you're wrong. Somewhere, and as I say, once again, there are people that estimate these things, somewhere between probably 15 and 21. Somewhere between those ages. As I said, it doesn't say how long. Interesting enough, when we talked about 1 Samuel chapter 27, he finally went to the Philistines for shelter, that he had been on the run for somewhere between 10 to 15 years. Can you imagine that? And I think we can kind of get the understanding of why he went to the Philistines. He wanted a home. He wanted somewhere to stay. But anyway, so it says, and he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. And now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, which simply means that as we go through that it was, you know, it was heavy, it was thick, and it was heavy. And his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and shield bearer went up before him. And then he stood and cried out to all armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you are the servants of Saul." Now I want us to look at that. Look at what the Philistine says about it. He says, "I'm a Philistine and you're the servants of who?" Saul. You see, he doesn't say anything about God. He doesn't recognize him as being a servant of God. Now later on, he's going to defy the armies of God, as it says here. And he's going to talk about my gods are better than your God. But here he says, "Aren't you a servant of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then he will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that will fight. Give me a man that will fight together." And so he said, he goes up, he says, "I'm going to defy the army." And so the Philistine is going to go out, he's going to challenge Israel. But the way he's going to challenge Israel is he's going to say, "You find me one guy, and we'll meet, and I'll be the representative for the Philistines, and you find you a representative for Israel." And as we said, that's one of the Hebrew word champion. That I'm going to be the representative, you find you a representative, and we're going to fight. And if I win, the Philistines are going to serve you. If you win, then we're going to serve y'all. Verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, what was their attitude? They're afraid. They say, "Hey, I think that's a pretty good idea. That way all of us won't get killed. At least when we lose," later we're going to find out that was kind of their attitude. "When we lose, at least there's just one guy going to lose his life. We're going to have to go and we're going to have to serve the Philistines." But the Bible says they're all afraid. It says they're dismayed and they're afraid. Now, we run across as we look at, or as we go back, let's just look real quick. 1 Samuel chapter 14 verse 52. 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 52. The Bible says there, now there was a fierce war with the Philistines all the days of Saul. So these people have been fighting with them all. They've been fighting with them all this time. You know, that's what we see throughout. They've been fighting with these Philistines over and over again. It says when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him for himself. And so he's assembling an army. Chapter 16 and verse 14, the Bible says there, "But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul." You remember, this is the idea that we talked about here. People had gone up and said the Spirit of God departed from Samuel. He realized that God wasn't on his side anymore. So then David, he's going to come to the camp of the Israelites. David, who's the youngest of eight brothers, he's kind of seems to split his time between the pasture and between the palace. He's one of the players. He helps to console Saul. He helps to bring back his spirits, if you will. We'll kind of move through some of this without reading all of this. But David, he's the youngest of eight brothers. Can you imagine having eight brothers? And he's the one that's out there, and he's in the fields. He's going out. He's feeding the sheep. He's dealing with the king as well. And David is going to bring some gifts from home, and he's going to go to Israel's camp. Here they're all out there. They're scared. Look at verse 16. It says, and the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. One side of the mountain, the Israelites, the Philistines, for 40 days, this champion. So not only are they scared, they are scared out of their mind, out of their wits, whatever you want to say. That for 40 days, it says, then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of dried grain of these 10 loaves and run to your brothers to all the camp. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of the thousands and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. And now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. They were doing a whole lot of fighting, weren't they? I think that's interesting the way that's put. So they are all there in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Well, they didn't, as I said, they weren't doing any fighting. They just kind of, every morning they'd wake up and they'd go stand on their side of the mountain, and every night they'd go down and they'd go to bed, and they'd wake up the next morning and come to their side of the mountain as well. And so they, you know, that happened for 40 days. And so David rose in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp of the army and was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. Here they are. They're all dressed out. You know, it's like they're going to fight. And they all dress out and they all get ready. Hopefully one day, I don't know why, you know, here the Philistines, I don't know what to say. I don't guess they would have to fight. They already had their fighter. They had the one that was going to fight for them. Well, the Israelites, they'd get up, they'd put on their fighting clothes, and they'd go out and they'd stand on the mountain in case somebody would go out and fight. And so David's going to bring gifts from home. Jesse decides he gets kind of worried. I would suggest that he would probably get worried. You know, he'd been out for 40 days, you hadn't heard any word. And so he's going to send David. He says, I want you to find out what's going on. And so David goes to the camp of the Israelites. And David sees Goliath and makes his challenge and sees the fear of the soldier. Look at verse 22. It says, and David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. And then he talked with them. There was the champion, the Philistine Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and was dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's come up? Have you seen him? You know, look at him. You know, yeah, we're scared of him. There's the next point there. Yeah, we're scared of him. Look at him. Look at what he's done. You know, he's, you know, they're all standing around. And so it says, surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with the great riches, will give him his daughter and give him his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. Boy, he really just kind of ups the ante. He just keeps trying to find somebody to go out and fight against. Who should have gone to fight Goliath? Who should have gone to fight Goliath? Saul. Saul should have been the one to go fight. He was head and shoulders above everybody else. Here's a man of war, but why didn't he? Well, he was scared. He's scared like everybody else, but you remember what we read just a minute ago? Look back. What'd you say? Spirit of God left him, and he wasn't going to win. Now look at verse 26. It says, then David spoke to the men who stood by, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Now look at what it says, that he should defy the armies of the living God. It doesn't matter what kind of rewards that's going to be put out there. David says, who is this man that's going to come up and defies the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. And David says, I don't care. I don't care about the money. I don't care about the wife. I don't care about the tax exemption. Who is this that's coming up and defying the armies of the living God? Now, what we're going to see within this is, as we go through that, how we're going to get ahead in our life, how we're going to do things, is we've got to have the perspective that David had in life. Two perspectives that a person has. Number one was the perspective of Saul and all those other people. They looked at the giant, and what did they see? They saw a giant. They saw a man of war. They saw a man that we can't, there's no possible way that we're going to be able to kill this man. What did David see? What did David see when he looked at Goliath? Uncircumcised Philistine. Did you say, ma'am? You know what he saw? Yeah, he saw an uncircumcised Philistine, but he saw a dead man. He saw a dead man. People saw they were going to all be dead. David saw a dead man. Why? God was with him. That was his perspective in life. God was with him. The theme of my lesson is supposed to be, as we look, faith in God's leading. That's exactly what we see in David. David recognized and understood God was going to lead him. And that is the only way that we today are ever going to get ahead in our life. If we understand and we recognize that God is leading, that he's there, he's in the forefront, and stop looking at the giants, stop looking at what the impossible is, and understand that these things are our foes. These things are, even though that they're enemies, they are dead. We will overcome everything. There is nothing that we cannot overcome if we have God as our leader, and we operate on the basis that David operated. Now, look, verse 27 says, the people answered him in this manner once again, saying, so it shall be done for the man who kills him. Now, something kind of strange is going to happen. David, he goes in, he's kind of got a bit misunderstood. Look at verse 28. It says, now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard what he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep back in the wilderness? I know your pride and insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? And by that, I think that what he means is that, why are we not fighting this guy? There's a cause. There's a cause behind all this. We ought to be doing something. He says, then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first one did. And so they look at David and they say, well, you shouldn't even be down here. You know why they said that? I think there's four things perhaps that they looked at. First of all, that Eliab said this is that he pretty much felt David was kind of insignificant, kind of worthless. He hadn't right to speak up. Here you are, you're just a shepherd, you're back here, you just came to give us food. You came to give us supplies, and Dad wants you to go back and just tell us how the war's going. You know, you just be quiet. You go and you do what you're going to do, and you go on back on your way. And that came from his brother. Real quick. A lot of times in dealing with the troubles and the problems that go on in life, a lot of the enemies that we have and a lot of the pushback comes from those that it shouldn't be. What should Eliab done when David came down and said these things? What should Eliab have done? He's sitting back home, but what should he have done? He should have encouraged him. Should have pat him on the back. Says, we thank you for pointing these things out to us. He hadn't done anything yet, but he should have said, you know, We thank you for pointing these things out to us. We realize now where what we ought to be doing and why we ought to be doing it. But no, he says, you're insignificant. Go back home. You know, who'd you leave all these sheep with? Second thing is that he felt that he knew David's motivation. What do you think David's motivation for all this was? Yeah, show him up. But why did he come down in the first place? I said, why did Eliab say, well, you just came down to do what? You just came down to give us his spot. You want to watch us fight. You want to watch a fight. Now, we know why you came down. Yeah. He was just doing what his father said. And he saw what was going on. And so you just came down to watch a fight. And the third thing that happened here along that line is it seems like maybe Eliab thought that David was trying to provoke somebody doing it. He said, what are y'all doing? Isn't there a cause for this? Isn't there a reason we ought to be going against this giant? Why are y'all just standing around? It may have been that Eliab was afraid that David was trying to get on him and trying to say, you ought to do it. You know what? You know what the fourth thing that really upset Eliab? And I think this is what really got him. Is David was right. You know, a lot of times when something happens and we're going through something and somebody comes to us and they say something and they're right about what they're saying, what's the first thing that we do? We lash back. We get defensive. So who are you? We look at all the things that you're doing wrong. Yes, ma'am. That's right. That as we look at that, he couldn't believe all this. Now, as we go through this, that we look at the story. We got just a few minutes. Look at the story as we go through it. We see that David goes in. He's gonna fight him. Saul's trying to give him his armor. He hasn't used it before. He hasn't proven it. He goes out. He takes five stones. Why he took five? I'm not real sure. There's some commentaries that'll tell you why he took five. But he only needed how many? He only needed one. God was with him. But he takes five stones. He goes out and he's going to kill this giant. Now, after David killed the giant, what did he have to do? He had to go take Goliath's sword and kill him. I say after he killed this, after the giant fell, he takes his sword and he goes and kills him. As we think about that, what did the Philistines do then? Whoa, what's that? They panicked, and what'd they do? They ran. What was the deal? You remember what the deal was? Whoever lost had to serve the other. What do you think the Philistines thought when they made that deal? Yep. They're going, we're going to have some servants. The last thing in their mind was somebody going against that giant and killing him. The last thing in their mind was to think that they would ever have to lift their finger to the Israelites. And so that then we find the Israelites going out and pursuing them and overtaking them. They didn't see things the way that God saw things. And that didn't come from the Philistines. That came from the Israelites. The Israelites had a lot of problems as we go through their history and trusting God. We spend our life trying to get ahead. We spend our life trying to fight temptation and fight problems. And we struggle and we struggle and we struggle. And after we've struggled and done everything that we could, then we ask God to help us. David didn't do that, did he? When did David ask for God's help? When this all started. And what we need to recognize and see, and I had thoughts through the rest of the chapter, but anyway, as we go through that and we see that what we need to make sure is we understand that God's on our side, that God will never leave us. And it doesn't matter how great the warrior is. It doesn't matter how great the problem is. We understand that we need to have God on our side. You know, one of the things that gets me, and we talked about 1 Samuel chapter 27 just a minute, that in the book of Psalms, we see Psalms that were written about a lot of these things that happened at these certain times. While David was in Gath for a year, and it said a year and 4 months, you know he never wrote a song? Why do you think that was? Anybody have a thought? Why didn't David write any psalms when he was in Gath, in the land of the Philistines? Because he knew God wasn't on his side anymore. And instead of just going and saying, well, this is what we need. When you get back, we need to get back. We need to start doing what God said. He just kind of left God too. Because God had already left him. Now, as we understand that, we're going to see the end of the story is that he, right after that, he leaves Gath. He begins to do as God said. He becomes what we expect him to be, that next section of the soap opera. Those twists and turns and cliffhangers as we go through. He's going to finally, after that year and 4 months, he's going to go and he's going to worship God. But he never wrote a psalm. And he never asked for God's protection because he thought he had the protection. And so he's human, wasn't he? He's human just like the rest of us who look for protection where we think we can find it when we think that, well, this God service stuff ain't going to work. And I'm not saying that's he had gotten that far, but he got down pretty good. To go to the Philistines and seek refuge from them, that's pretty rough. Now, as we think about that, as I said, we see the problem as the Philistine had seen David, the Bible says he kind of disdained him. Look, go down to verse 42 real quick. It says, when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come out with sticks? And Philistine cursed David by his gods. And so he's going to defy the armies of that. So that was said, once again, that's David's perspective. Philistines coming to defy the armies of God. You know, it's amazing. And I know as we read some of these things and I kind of look at it and I, as I said, I kind of have seen this as a kind of a movie that plays out or something. But, you know, it says, and when the Philistine looked about and saw David, who do you think he expected to see finally come out to him? A man. And a man, warrior. Warrior's going to come out. And you know, you kind of listen to this Philistine guy, and he, in that verse, what's his name, James Earl Ray, has a deep voice. You really listen to him. Like that, you kind of, yeah, that's kind of how you see the Philistine. Who you think I'm a dog? You come out here with patting me on my sticks. And you can't, have you ever kind of done that? Maybe somebody says something to you, and you're expecting somebody to talk to you, and you kind of look around and see who it is, and it's a little child, and you have to look down. That's kind of what I see the guy doing. He's looking around. He says, well, who are you? Why are you coming here? See, why is that? It's because God doesn't look on the outside. The Bible talks about God looks on the inside, right? And it didn't matter how big David was. David overcame. And that's really the perspective that, as we said, that we need. And of course, we can read the rest of the chapter and we know the outcome as we go through that. But it all has to do with that perspective of life. How am I going to live? What am I going to do? How am I going to overcome? Am I going to accept and am I going to look at the leading of God? We talked about providence, right? Reuben talked about providence. What did providence mean? Remember what providence is? That God will work his plan, that he'll be with you as this plan works. The word providence simply means provide. It has to do with provision. But it's the idea that God will provide it, and there's the plan that God has. And so we need to recognize and see his leading. See his providence. Understand that there's an end that God expects out of me. And the middle, pretty much going to be determined by us. We are born, we die. What happens when we die? Nobody's chosen to be born, were they? Anybody choose to be born? No, I didn't think so. But anyway, nobody chose to be born. Anybody going to choose to die? Nobody chooses to die. It's going to happen. Birth happens. Death happens. Where are we going to go when we die? That's going to be determined by us. Are we going to look? Are we going to seek for God? Are we going to allow Him to lead us in our life? Are we going to allow all these things that happen outside to overcome us? Look very quickly over the book of Ephesians. In Ephesians, the sixth chapter, the Bible tells us as Christians, it says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." Doesn't it get tired sometimes to stand? You know, sit down, don't you? We get tired of standing. And we get tired of thinking about, well, yeah, God promised us He's going to be with us. Promised He's never going to forsake us. But sometimes it kind of gets hard to stand. But, you know, here's that, just the picture of David putting on that armor that he had not proven that armor. But God tells us as Christians, we need to put on armor so that we can stand against the wiles of the devil. He's out there and he uses forces as we look to overcome us. And we need to fight against those. I got the signal. So anybody real quick? If not, I appreciate your attention. And as we've gone through these things, I hope that we've been encouraged some way today. Thank you.